All right, thank you. I'm going to sort of continue the theme, but I'm going to put a twist on it somewhat. And I'm mainly going to put a twist on it because we're certainly excited about sulfoxaflor, and I'm going to show you a lot of slides on that at the end. But chemically alone is not going to answer the question for the problem that we have in the Mississippi Delta, where we're spraying, in some cases, 9 to 14 applications alone for plant bugs. So I'm certainly going to talk about that, and we're excited, but I'm going to show you some other things as well that we're thinking and doing. To start with, just to kind of give you an idea of the situation that we're in, this is from this year, cotton losses in Mississippi. And if you look at tarnished plant bug, it far exceeds any other pest that we have in the Delta region of the state, at least from an economic standpoint. So it's very important for us. I actually average 6.5 sprays, but again, we do have lots of areas where we certainly exceed 10 applications just for plant bug control. And in fact, it is responsible for turning some of the cotton acres in the Delta into some of the grains despite the high prices of the commodities. Now, this is a picture from 2007. This is Smitty, my technician. This cotton is 555. It had 12 applications for plant bugs, and you can see there's hardly fruit on the plant. This was actually some of our test plots that we winded up abandoning just due to extreme plant bug control. We could not get under control, and that cotton is at least 8 foot tall with no fruit on it. We winded up just letting it go after 12 applications. So this happens occasionally, but it's happening more frequently than not in recent years, and a lot of that may actually have to do with the crop diversity that we're seeing now. In 2006, we had 1.2 million acres of cotton. Last year, we had 285,000 acres of cotton. Now, I bring that up because of this. Really believe that cotton is really more of a sink than a source. These plant bugs are building up in other crops, wild host, and cotton is the recipient of the plant bugs that we build up in the landscape. So when we have a very few acres of cotton and we have the same numbers building up, the populations are more concentrated and probably leads to some of the problems we've been having in recent years. These edge effects, y'all all hear us talking about it in the Mid-South, they're real. Probably more important than we really give credit. Had a grower actually, Gus in Arkansas, tell me at a meeting one time, we're having to treat these. This is cotton next to corn. This actually had 15 applications for plant bugs and still could not control this edge effect. And you can see the corn harvested. But this grower in Arkansas told me, he said, this edge effect is serious. He said, I have 350 acres of edge next to corn. So one of the things we're trying to get producers to do is to block their cotton away from the corn areas, reducing some of these edge effects when we can. Another thing, and this is some work that Jeff Gore, and I'm going to show a lot of Jeff Gore stuff, a lot of the things that he's been doing over the last several years. And one of the things that he's doing is we're concentrating not only on the chemical side, but we're starting to look into some of the other cultural and other management things that we can do to go along with chemical control. At least in our area, we know that when we plant late, we're just exposing them later planting populations to higher plant bug numbers because as they go through the season, more generations go through and the numbers are actually higher. This is actually where he started in mid-April and he made various plantings all the way through late May with sprayed and unsprayed plots. And what you see, particularly in the unsprayed plots relative to the sprayed plots, is a stair-step reduction in yield. But also what you'll see as you move into these bigger populations, these were sprayed once a week for plant bugs throughout the year, just could not keep up with the big numbers. So one of the things we're trying to do, we're talking about earliness again. It's something we've got away from the last several years. Not only from a planting date standpoint, we can see this same thing just in variety selection. Jeff's been doing this work for several years. Just take, for instance, a 555, which is a very full season late cotton, and you compare it to a very early cotton, a 444. This is the plant bug populations. The diamonds, what they represent is 350 DD60s after note above white flower 5. What you see is the plant populations really didn't build to after the 444 was actually cut out. The 555 required two additional applications just because it was in the field under the presence of those high plant bug numbers. So we're really starting to talk earliness again as just another cultural strategy to control plant bugs. Now another thing, I'm not going to spend much time on this, but I am going to point it out because we do have one company out there, Delta Pine, has a commercial variety that is nectarless. I think just everybody is well aware that there is at least some resistance from a nectarless variety to plant bugs. Certainly not an answer by itself, and it's not a reason to choose a variety, but it's one more component that we can add to our whole arsenal that would somewhat possibly help a little bit in plant bugs. This is just looking at square retention and nectarless cotton, both in treated and untreated, and anywhere from 10 to 15% better square retention. Now I'm going to get into the chemicals a little bit, but before I get into the chemicals, I want to point this out. None of the insecticides we're using today are given 100% control. There's no question about it. So anything that we do wrong just compounds that. If we don't get good coverage, if we use the wrong nozzle types. This is a trial. Several of us conducted this trial in this room. And I'm not going to get hung up on nozzles at all, but what I'm going to tell you is, for bug control, if we break them up fine, get the pressure up and the right GPA, we can get better control. This is 3/4 of a pound of acephate looking across the whole array of nozzles with a constant GPA. Now, I can make an air induction tip that's used for drift control perform very similar to a hollow comb if I jack that pressure up to 115 pounds and blow it out of a small nozzle. So that's why I don't want to get hung up necessarily on the nozzle type, but we've got to get those droplet sizes small enough that we're not out there trying to prevent drift. What we're trying to do in this situation is kill bugs, and we often forget that because we're making so many Roundup applications, we want to control drift. The two things don't go together. So first and foremost, we need to apply the technology correctly, the spray technology, to make our chemicals work at least to the best of their ability. All right, I want to bring this up because this is real interesting. This is certainly nothing new. Piperonyl butoxide, it's something that's been around forever to kind of help with metabolic resistance. We've never looked at it. But for Jeff, last year, we got a retailer that's told Jeff and I this over about 5 years. Won't y'all look at some of this? We kind of blew it off, never would do it. Well, Jeff got some last year, something we're pretty excited about from what his initial results were. And then Gus saw the data, and Gus done some of the work in Arkansas, actually had very similar results. So what I want you to look at is if you look at, here's acephate at 1/2 pound. Here's acephate, this is 5 days after treatment one, plus 4 ounces of PBO. Now I want you to look now at the light blue bar and then compare it to the pink bar. This is Brigade at 6.4 ounces with 4 ounces of PBO, and then look at Brigade alone at 6.4 ounces. This is consistently what we're seeing, and Gus saw the same thing. Here's it 2 days after application two. Here's your comparison, orange to yellow, light blue to pink, so it held up 2 days there. So one of the things that we're thinking, now this is certainly not an answer, it's just another piece of the puzzle. So one of the things that we're thinking now is that when we get into some of these real high plant bug populations, possibly when we're going out with acephate, or maybe even some others that we haven't tested yet, maybe the addition of PBO will help us get that population knocked in the head where we can follow up with some other treatments and get these rising populations under control. It's something that we're excited about. Now, very quickly, I'm going to mention Diamond. It's not a new insecticide, but I think it's somewhat new because we're starting to look at it in different ways. I think we've had this compound around for a long time. We've tested it. We all knew it killed plant bugs. One of the things we're starting to figure out, particularly from some of Dr. Gore's work, is when to use it. Using it early, somewhere between the third week of square and the first bloom, tends to really provide much better control than going after these big populations as rescue treatments. And this was a fascinating study to me. It's actually looking at lint yield. Now, what Jeff did, he went to a big field, broke it in half, sprayed half the field with Centric, half the field with Diamond, and then started overlaying these treatments on it. Took yield at the end of the day. Every treatment, regardless of what they were, where Diamond was initiated at the third week of square, it made those treatments look better, and it says a lot for the residual and getting that initial population under control. We're starting to figure this one out, and it's something that we're going to be using. This is just one to throw this in here. It's one slide after three applications. It's just an efficacy test is all it is, but I wanted to throw it in there. It's from a regional plant bug test that I was doing this year. Diamond is always right up there at the top. The problem we've had is a lot of our producers have looked at this as an add-on. It's not an add-on. It's providing excellent control. We will start using more of this now that we've got a better handle on how to use it. ULV malathion, I'm not going to say much about it. I think Roger's going to say a little more after this. We're starting to work this into our arsenal a little bit, because when you're spraying as much as we are, you run out of products from a seasonal use standpoint in our environment. We're starting to look at this ULV. We've actually followed Louisiana's lead. This is a trial that me and Tucker Miller, who's in the audience, did this year. It's basically just looking at pre and post counts on large block fields, where what we were doing, the red numbers, is where we would just rotate in ULV Mount Thion. It's going to get used in our area. Roger's going to get more into it a little bit later. It's just one more piece of the puzzle for us to kind of change it up a little bit. We're looking at it mixed with pyrethroids going out ULV. Now I want to move into sulfoxaflor. I have about 3 minutes left, and I'm going to show you some data pretty quickly. It really mimics everything that everybody else has been doing. This is a trial that I conducted this year. This is one in Stoneville, and what the red bars are showing are 5 days after application two and 14 days after application two. Here's your sulfoxaflor at 0.05, at the 0.045 level. Here it is at 5 days. Here it is where we looked at it at the higher rates. This is actually where I looked at it mixed with the pyrethroid. We will do some of that because of worms and late season spider mites. We'll throw some brigade in late in the season. And here it is alone at the higher rate, the 0.067 rate. Now, if you come in at 5 days after application three, this was a building population. It was really beginning to grow. If you look at the top three treatments in the test, every one of them was a sulfoxaflor treatments. Relatively no difference, but they are pushed to the top. And the things we're comparing them to, we're not comparing them to the small stuff. We're comparing them to a pound of acephate or to 2.5 ounce rates of centric. We're comparing them to the best that we got. And what we're seeing is excellent control, as the other speakers have pointed out. Now, this next series of slides comes from Jeff Gore. Now, what I want to concentrate, the rate titration studies. But what I want you to really concentrate, because it's somewhat of a jumble when you look at it, I want you to look at the pink bar and then the gray bar, because that's what we, in this test, is the standards. And just look at the relative difference of the bars with the standards. And this is a pound of acephate and 2 ounces of centric. Look at those compared to the other bars. Here's 3 days after treatment one, 5 days after treatment one, 2 days after treatment two. You've heard several of these speakers talk about in these high plant bug areas, these two applications look better. Certainly they do in these areas of the Delta where we experience it. Here's your higher rates or your X rates that we'll be using of the sulfoxaflor. Again, here's your two standards I want you to look at. Here's 5 days after treatment two. Certainly equal to or better than the standards in most of the cases that we've been looking at. Here's one from Scott Stewart in Tennessee. I want to throw this up here. What I really want you to look at is sort of a busy slide. Here's his total bugs. He's looking at it 4 days, 8 days, and 20 days. But if you look at your total bugs, here's your sulfoxaflor to the left compared to his standards. And some of the bugs in Tennessee are a little easier to control, but that's not to say that they don't get high populations. This is pretty good numbers when he's running 20-plus on a 10-row foot. So they do get high numbers, and it's performing across a larger geography. So I just want to summarize by saying this. We're really excited to have this. We're excited for a couple reasons. In just about every trial that any of us in the Mid-South have conducted, in every case it's performed equal to, in many cases it's performed better, at least numerically, than the standards that we're using. One of the reasons that we're excited about it also is not only is it just good on plant bugs, it's also extremely good on aphids. Most of the products that we have in place now are either good on plant or decent on plant bugs and weak on aphids, or vice versa. Our growers now are going to have a tool that's going to get both of them at the same time. I think it's going to be adopted very readily. We're excited about getting a lot more research done in the future with it, but it's one that we're definitely excited about. But it's not going to be alone something that we're going to rely on. We're going to have to utilize all these things and more than I've been talking about, at least in the Mississippi Delta, where we're under extreme pressure. We're going to have to combine everything we know about plant bugs, and it's going to have to be a multi-tactical or really an IPM-based approach. And I think that's where we're headed, in the direction that we're starting to head now. With that, I'll be done. I have a little bit of time for questions, if anybody's got one. Thank you.